Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's always thrown together at the last minute, kind of like Middle Eastern country invasion plans that are just like either a month too late or there's just no weapons of mass destruction, you know, it's just madness. And my very special guests to help us through this madness are two American Freedom Radio show hosts. We have Suzanne Posel from OccupyCorporatism.com. Suzanne, welcome to the program.
Hello.
And we have Alex and Siri from Outside the Box. Alex, welcome.
Hello, Vinny. Hello, Susan. Hello, American Freedom Radio.
You know, it's about Christmas time. I was wondering what you guys are wishing Santa would put in your stocking. Is it depleted uranium, chemtrail composites, what? Nobody want to take that?
That's a really good question. I'm going to have to think about that some more. But I just sometimes pray for just a normal, sane world in a very insane universe. Moment to moment, so yeah, as soon as the universe can deliver that Christmas wish that I've had the last couple of years to live in a sane world, hey, I'm ready to receive. Other than material things, you know, I just hope that it's going to be a good holiday for everybody, especially people and their relationships with family, that where there's hurt feelings, that we can work through some of those hurt feelings and get through these holidays.
You know, my sister got very angry at Sarah yesterday because she said that Christmas is just for kids. And my sister's point is that Christmas is actually very much for adults because it's actually quite rare that we get to be around our families and do that kind of close contact, sharing a meal and what have you.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's what we should be doing. We should be spending time with our families and our loved ones and stay away from all of the consumer debt slaves and just have a good time and enjoy each other.
You know, it'd be great if we gave somebody a present, all right? Let's say your sibling is a consumer debt slave. Why don't you buy them a T-shirt that says consumer debt slave, you know, in white stencil on black T-shirt? I reckon it'd go down a treat.
Now that they're outlawing feeding the homeless, everyone get an extra loaf of bread, some extra meat, some cheese, or whatever, peanut butter and jelly. Make sandwiches and hand them out to everyone that is homeless. Just keep them in your car, you know, rotate them. But, you know, keep them handy and just keep handing them out. Because, you know, I think we should help also other people. And screw the municipalities and the local governments that think that we shouldn't be helping each other because we're not a certified kitchen.
Yeah, yeah. I also thought about runaway protesting, you know. You could just, I don't know, turn up somewhere with a megaphone or what have you and bullhorn like a consulate office or something of that nature. And then when the cops arrive, you change into a Santa suit and you just kind of like stand down on the corner or whatever, ringing a bell, going, oh, Merry Christmas, and start collecting donations and what have you. You know, they'll be none the wiser.
Maybe we could have like a Christmas conspiracy theory parade, and instead of all that crap that they have like at the Macy's Day Parade, you could just tell people the truth. Maybe have singing and dancing along with it.
Get your conspiracy this Christmas.
What happens when you change the lettering around on Santa? You get Satan. You get materialization. And I just want to add to what Susan was saying. How about some civil disobedience along those lines of helping other people? Many of us understand and respect those that engage in civil disobedience relating to the Second Amendment. And that's all fine and great. But what about going deeper into community issues and bring the civil disobedience into that, at where we converge on these cities where they're enforcing some of these draconian laws, immoral laws?
I think the great Howard Zinn said, our problem is not civil disobedience. Our problem is civil obedience. And just recently, I think last week or might have been the week before, Matt Damon himself echoed those exact same words. Now, I mean, come on. If Matt Damon can come out and say that we need to be civilly disobedient, I think Santa would be right behind it too, apart from the fact that he was created entirely by the Coca-Cola Corporation.
That is a book that everyone should have in their library, The People's History of the United States of America by Howard Zinn. That is a definite, you have to have that in your library and physically have it. Appreciate the, you know, the physicality of the paper and turning the pages. That book is filled with incredible information from eyewitness accounts who didn't make it into the indoctrination station history books or even, you know, the popular Borders and Barnes & Noble bookstore history section, because they just don't want you to understand what actually happened to create the situation that we're in today.
Because, yeah, and you'd probably prevent similar types of discrimination happening against other people. Speaking of giving the gift of conspiracy this Christmas, the realization dawned on me that conspiracy theorists are now the most discriminated group of people, just in general, around the world. No.
Are we a minority?
Well, just think about this. Think about this. All right. You know, people say that women are discriminated against. Okay. Try introducing yourself to a group of strangers as a woman. Hello, I'm a woman. And they go, okay, whatever. You come and introduce yourself. Hello, I'm a conspiracy theorist. You just watch them back away slowly. You know,
right?
Or start insulting you or something like that. You know, and it's. Like, it's not like as hardcore as, say, racism was or whatever. It's even worse because it's just straight up in your face and everybody thinks it's socially acceptable to abuse a conspiracy theorist. There's people who find it socially acceptable to even hit you if you come up with something that controverts their facts. They get really, really angry. Are we the, like, we're like the new abused minority, man, and we didn't even realize it until now.
You know, I have a lot to say about that. Go ahead, Susan.
I know. I was thinking, you know, 30 years down the road, are they going to say, oh, geez, it was so terrible that we were so mean to the conspiracy theorists because they were right. We should have listened instead of stoning them. Oh, darn.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And but yet, after all these years, I've never really, very rarely do I get an email from someone that thought in 2005 I was a conspiracy kook for talking about Big Brother when I got involved in activism in Portland, Oregon. I've never heard from people years ago that used to call in and prank my show and call me a weirdo. I've never heard from them. And now we live in that Big Brother reality where Amazon's going to be bringing us our packages, our dildos, via drones. So I hope that's so much, Susan, but I'm not going to hold my breath. But let me say this briefly. If I'm with someone and I care about their status or I don't want them to be marginalized, I tell them, be careful what you tell people about me. Even though you may respect me and you may see the value in me, the world doesn't see necessarily independent journalists that operate outside not just mainstream media, but paid media, actually working for a print media organization. And I just tell people, use discretion when you introduce me, because they may hold it against you when I give them my website.
And all the information is now being collected on people. I'm feeling rather exhausted today because I got to bed at 5:30 a.m. I was up all night editing this Take Back Your Power seminar about smart meters and all the surveillance technology and everything that they've got now. And, oh boy. Did you know that Google's now treating people who want to go off-grid as suspicious? Like, you know, you don't have a Facebook, you don't have a website, you don't have this, that, the other. Oh, why? Why? They got real weird stuff too, man. Like, all of your appliances are going to be, like, smart appliances. You know the technology, that wireless technology that allows you to, like, change the channel on your brand new flashy TV just by waving your hands at it or something? It means that there's a wireless transmitter in your house that's connected to the internet that is watching you move. They got little robotic vacuum cleaners, okay, that you can plug into with your smartphone. It's got a little onboard camera. So, you know, your alarm goes off at home, and you can just plug into your camera just to see whether or not it's a spider crawling and over the sensor on the alarm or something like that, you know. And they can even have an attachment where you can give them a taser gun. A vacuum cleaner with a taser gun, okay? It is the home appliance that cleans up dirt and cleans up crime at the same time.
They have RFID chips on diapers to monitor your child's health. It analyzes the contents of the diapers.
They have smart pajamas for your kids. I don't know, seriously. Like, pajamas connected to a smartphone, so if your kid gets upset or something like that, the smartphone will turn on right next to its head and play it like really nice Beethoven music or something to soothe it to sleep.
They've got checkpoints now where you have to show your ID, and they're randomly asking for people's ID on Facebook. They're not doing it all at once because they don't have the staff to do it. But I got my notification 2 weeks ago. So for those that want to stay connected with other people, unless you develop a backup form and you don't plan to show your ID, there's a day where that cyber checkpoint is going to knock at the door and you won't be able to get back in.
You mean your driver's license?
Your driver's license. I was asked last week for my identification to get on Facebook. Now, because I am Alex Ansari, and I only, you know, it's a Texas ID. I don't even live in Texas anymore. Look, all right, fine, there's my ID. What are you going to do? But for a lot of other people, I know they're not going to do that. And I'd like to see people maintain their connections. I'd like to see Susan Polzel with a cool forum, too. Let's all start looking at social media forums off of Facebook, because they're coming for us. And a big way they can disconnect the information that we're sharing is to make sure we're not on their platform. That's what I'm concerned about. YouTube as well.
Well, yeah, they're using all of the copyright infringement to take down massive amounts of information, including when people are filming the police. Mm-hmm. They take those YouTube videos down immediately with copyright infringement. Some of them say, like, the NFL. Or TriStar Pictures. Like,
I got hit by the WE. I got hit by the WE because I was criticizing domestic violence against women in so-called professional wrestling, and the complaint came from the executive office. So I'm a little bit flattered that I may have pissed off Vince McMahon himself by showing images on Access TV and commenting on this mind control. But yeah, you're definitely right. We have to be very careful what copyrighted material. I'm the worst offender with using copyrighted music in my videos. And so I'm kind of in a mad dash pretty soon to take all my stuff off YouTube, at least back it up, because I feel really nervous.
Oh, yeah. Well, just think about this. I've got like 11,000 subscribers. Imagine if I just lost my YouTube channel all of a sudden. You know, there's well over 5,000 videos on that channel. That would take like months, like six solid months, I think, of nonstop uploading in order to get back.
I put up a video talking about this article that I wrote about the Miriam Carey that got shot in D.C. And the company that I exposed in my article, Alhura TV, actually put a copyright infringement on that video and had me take it down.
I remember I got a copyright infringement from the New Zealand courts. They were filming inside the foyer of the court, and they tell us to put away the cameras and what have you. We were just kind of like showing the cops that they can't boss us around inside the courthouse. It was quite interesting to have that complaint. You know, you're not allowed to report on the courts, okay? A court of record is not allowed to be recorded. Turn it off! Take it off YouTube! We'll be right back, folks. Welcome back, everybody, to the show that's about uncomfortable silences. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Ah, you see what I did there? You see what I did? Okay. my very special guests, that's a plural, by the way, is Alex Ansari from Outside the Box, Suzanne Posel from Occupy Corporatism, and now Baran Hise from WTFRLY.com. Baran, welcome to the program.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
We're just having a little roundtable discussion here about Christmas and how being a conspiracy theorist is like about as bad as being a black South African during the 80s. You know, it's quite it's a festival out there. And what are you getting up to this holiday season, Brian?
I don't really celebrate Christmas anymore. I'm among the class that, you know, it's really not economically responsible to celebrate Christmas in the traditional American fashion of buying presents for people that don't really need them or deserve them, etc.
So you don't, like, at least knit some socks for somebody?
I didn't say I don't give any presents, but you know that whole feeling where people are pressured to give gifts for a lot of people that they don't even talk to, for example.
Yeah.
You know, the corporatism of it in that sense. I don't want to get too far off into that, but, you know, I kind of draw a bright line at people that I talk to, basically.
Hey, you said you don't want to get too far off into it. I'd actually like you to encourage you to continue, because that's a very important part of Christmas now, isn't it? How do you celebrate?
That is Christmas.
Yeah,
there is no more like Christmas. If you walked up to, you know, if you did one of these Mark Dice videos where he asks, you know, fools on the streets what they think about a certain thing and ask them to relay the importance of Christmas, I would say that 1 in 4 would get it marginally right, you know, in terms of the Bible and other things like that. And beyond that, it's not really worth it.
Yeah. I actually kind of almost cracked up laughing there when you're talking about Mark Dice interviewing these fools in the streets.
I mean, seriously, you could see it happening like that. That should be his next video or one of them coming up. And I hope that he just, you know, takes that and runs with it, because it would be hilarious to just expose. I mean, all it is naked capitalism. And, you know, it is actually kind of important from a dollars and cents standpoint, because, you know, Black Friday is basically the day that retailers, you know, are excited to start heading back towards the black, towards, you know, even profitability for the year. And, you know, the funny thing about it was that this whole corporate cycle eats itself, you know, because I study the economy, you know, day in and day out. And what's noticed this year is that it's the same way that the mainstream media will catch up with alternative media in terms of embracing certain known facts. It takes months, maybe even years, for certain things to, like I said, be embraced. But the same thing kind of happens in financial news. And this year, one of the things that's embraced is that all the stores that were that forced employees into work on Thanksgiving Day or the evening of Thanksgiving, a lot of the sales that they would have gotten on Black Friday just came on Thursday night, and, you know, all it did was it pulled forward sales. It didn't create new sales, and, you know, that's kind of the idea, is that, so, you know, some of the stores even decided to not open after their competition opened, because they knew that basically they would barely cover their operating costs even if they just opened on Thursday night. And, you know, that's kind of like that right there is the line, the absolute, you know, maximum profitability that you can squeeze out of that one trick, you know, literally to keep, you know, keep up with the ever expanding need for growth, which is, you know, what Wall Street demands. And I think that's just really funny this year that it's finally actually making a point that, okay, this is about as far as we can push the ridiculous corporate nature of Christmas.
You know, I think it actually can be pushed much further. Right, think about this. Here's what's happening. Can I finish?
Just in that one limited fashion, it's like that's a lesson that is basically being cemented at this point. Like, that, you know what I mean? Like one of those things where that's an angle where it's okay. Thanksgiving night may be too far for stores to open. Thanksgiving morning, it's still, you know, right on the American line of distasteful and unethical, but we're going to do it anyway because it's going to make money. But Thanksgiving night, that's out of the question. Now, that seems to be the path going forward.
Yeah, Christmas is just a big marketing tool now, because I found in New Zealand, they start advertising Christmas and playing Christmas music in the shops in, like, late October, early November, yeah, to get
people...
They
do it here, too. I think you and I joked about that when Halloween came around. I was like, just wait, they're going to start playing the Christmas music.
Suzanne, Alex, you've been kind of silent there.
Did you know that they pump the smell of fresh-baked bread outside of a grocery store, because they've done studies to show that you're more likely to buy more food if you smell freshly baked bread?
That's a good scheme. I do get real hungry when I smell freshly baked bread.
The Velociraptor, he would wonder if it's GMO bread, isn't that like spreading air pollution?
Wouldn't that be wouldn't that be like the Velociraptor, you know, the little raptor with the little claw under his chin?
That's who I'm talking about.
The Velociraptor.
He's a philosopher, and he's a raptor.
What did I say? Did I say Velociraptor? Yeah, the Velociraptor. He's...
That's funny. Yeah, I didn't know he had a name.
That's one of the best memes ever.
It really is.
It's one of the best memes ever.
Oh, and right along with the meme of Raptor Jesus.
I haven't seen that one.
He went extinct for your sins.
Oh, that's so nice.
That's a new one.
He'll save your soul, and he's in your oil.
Oh, God. He'll run your car and save your life.
Yeah. He knows about all the poor and distraught, and he teaches lessons that have never been taught. It's Raptor Jesus.
Oh, so he knows if you need an oil change, and he knows if your shocks are good or bad.
Right.
And he sees you when you're sleeping, because he's going to attack you when you're awake and eat you.
Oh, wait, guys, I forgot to mention this. They have, Microsoft is creating the smart bra.
Oh, God.
Okay. I've got to get my hands on that.
Wait a minute, hold on. It measures mood, so it'll tell the woman via her smartphone that she's, you know, maybe getting close to that time of the month. And it helps her to lose weight by sending alerts to her smartphone when she's making bad food choices.
This is disgusting.
I don't know. I think I read something about how they're going to be able to spy and figure out what's on your computer without even the internet, just using the airwaves themselves. I'm still trying to wrap my head around this. This is truly terrifying. I'm just like, wait a minute. You mean I just can't turn off my airport and you're going to be able to get in?
Well, I don't want my bra to yell at me because I'm eating a sandwich.
or like, if you're upset or something like that, your bra pops up. Wench, you on the rag, okay? Calm down!
The Fortune 500 is pushing for their own destruction. They're accelerating it, in fact, because people are going to get fed up and you know, come with pitchforks to headquarters and... You know, have conversations.
Well, people will only get fed up when they stop getting fed by McDonald's.
That's true.
The ultimate nightmare. People will get so fed up with Wall Street that they start begging China and Russia to lead the New World Order. I think we're seeing a little bit of that now. So
that's already happened. Like, yeah. China is is not one... In the same way that America is co-opted, China's co-opted. It's not... You know, right. It's not like some mysterious dragon, you know,
it's all very much connected, you're right.
Right.
Yeah, but except what they'd do is they'd use the Chinese and the Russians to suppress the Americans, and the Americans to suppress the Chinese and Russians, and deploy countries of each side overseas.
Exactly.
Because that way, it's much easier to suppress a people if you don't speak the same language and if you don't have a commonality with them, you know? If you're a US soldier on the streets of America, and you're asked to shoot, you know, a crying mother or something like that, you know, you'll think twice about it. But if it's just somebody else from another country and you're just there on tour, hey, you'll shoot one. Shoot 100 of them. Yeah, who cares?
I don't bring anything far into American soil.
Well, you know what that reminds me of? There's something going on right now in Taos, New Mexico. I just came back from Taos, New Mexico. I'm back in Trinidad. There was a protest taking place full of all of these people that are converging outside the New Mexico State Police Office. And they are upset that a police officer was fired for shooting at an unarmed woman and her five children as she fled a stop. And this is a national story right now. Well, the protesters are upset, most of them Hispanic. They're upset that this officer was fired. And I'm thinking maybe there's some sort of entitlement welfare mentality here. Here they came. They thought that they were going to be cops and everything was going to be fine, and there wasn't going to be any accountability, and somebody gets fired. There's police accountability. We should be celebrating. And they're about to riot. Not literally, but they're really, really upset. They're really, really, really offended that the managers in charge of the New Mexico State Police, the supervisors, that they're not okay with that officer shooting at an unarmed woman. So I'm shocked that there's a protest against this. But again, I think it's mostly family of police and police themselves that are protesting. I don't think it's the average person that's protesting. And so when I look at that, I see people with an entitlement welfare mentality, that they can get a job as a cop, do whatever they want, and not
that sounds like the Republican brown shoe loafer crowd that's protesting.
Yeah, well, if you watch the videos, they look like regular people. But yeah, I think you're right. And it's
sad. Not to left-right it, but, you know, like, given the dynamics of it, that sounds like the old crowd that makes excuses for law and order regardless of, you know, the circumstances, because that exists in every form.
Yeah, they pursue law and order without regard to its cost, including the cost of everybody's freedom. To not get shot at when you're not actually harming anybody?
Well, that's kind of why I you know, went at it with the left-right thing in that sense. And really it's because it's not even a left-right thing. It's a class issue. There's a certain class of people that, you know, really regardless of color in America, and I think that this gets lost. Like, you know, that if you don't, if you're in a certain class, you don't get violated by the police, or that's the idea. And, you know, they don't understand until it actually happens to them that they're not really protected from that to a large degree or as big a degree as they think. And because of that, they kind of stick up for, you know, law and order by default or the police force by default, you know, and think that, oh, that guy must have been doing something to deserve the persecution, you know, no matter who it is.
I think when we talk about persecution, what people don't realize is what it's like to be the one suffering the persecution, you know?
Right.
It makes you really angry. And, you know, it becomes almost understandable that truthers start to get really, really angry with people and call them slaves and yell and scream at their family and that kind of thing. It's almost understandable because of the frustration that you get from not being taken seriously by those closest to you, you know? And that's a kind of deep, hurtful, cutting thing that I don't think a Christmas with your family solves in most cases, you know?
You know, I talk to a lot of people about that, you know, on Facebook, that, you know, a lot of random people that, you know, we come across in the course of, you know, spreading information that, you know, are more engaged than the average person. And, you know, people, you know, what I find, because I'm an admin on different Facebook pages also, what I find is that people that are just kind of coming into the information, everybody has to go through that cycle where they sort of bypass the family and friend aspect because, you know, they'll try it and realize that, you know, certain, you know, distributions of people will just not take to it and don't care and, or, you know, just don't want to be bothered. So, you know, ultimately people have to get past that sort of mental block and realize that if you're going to, you know, whatever this information means to you, you have to understand that it's not going to mean that to other people, and it's something that you have to just ignore.
Right, that's really an important point. I try to use discretion, and I try to, I want to become a better person as the days go on in my own life. And part of that means not reacting in a negative way when I see something posted that I don't like. And I'm not proud of everything that I've done, but I really try to use restraint now and go, okay, that's where they're at. And I definitely don't follow this paradigm of, oh, that person's a shill because they don't agree with me. That type of psychosis right now is running so rampant, and I don't see any end to it. So I guess we as independent journalists, we have to use discretion and not let people pull us into their crazy web, because there are some serious crazy webs out there on Facebook.
Oh, there's some trolls to be sure. You know, the trolls from The Lord of the Rings, it's sort of a great idea, you know, pop a little American hat on them and an American suit that says, the troll army needs you. Believe me, ladies and gentlemen, the troll army does need you, and there are many places to participate in the web of life. We'll be right back after the break. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show on American Freedom Radio. My very special guests are Baran Hines from WTFRLY.com, Suzanne Posel, OccupyCorporatism.com, and Alex Ansari, Outside the Box TV, and a nice little Christmas roundtable. Now, Baran, you did an article about Building 7 or something you wanted to bring up?
Yeah, I left it for you in the chat there if you wanted to review it or if you want to just talk about it now, I guess. Basically, some new information had been finally put together, and you know, with Building 7 and 9/11 in general, there's not a lot of new information that comes out that's really groundbreaking. It's just more so more people coming to the realization and, you know, willing to actually, you know, put that out publicly in terms of, you know, like new architects and engineers, whatever, whoever decides to comment on that. But in this case, somebody made a FOIA request to NIST for some documents, and this was back in January 2012. A guy by the name of David Cole went through these documents that got released, and they were construction drawings. They were the original construction drawings for the Trade Center site and for Building 7. And when they were going through them, what they were looking for was how NIST came up with the structural construction of the or the layout of the steel structure when they were analyzing the fire and the failure of Building 7 that they basically just, you know, kind of guessed at, because most people don't really understand what NIST did with the report on Building 7. There was no real investigation of it. It was basically just a hypothetical reconstruction of the building and the simulation of fires in the building based on, you know, certain points that they said in the beginning, and it was really poor simulation at that. So, you know, if you were, you know, what I'm trying to say is that it was forensically unscientific, and it was just kind of an estimation to cover up the fact that Building 7 wasn't in the 9/11 Commission report. So what ended up happening was the people that were assigned to work on the Building 7 report, basically, it was very compartmentalized, and a lot of people were given individual sections of the report to work up, and then they were pieced together at the end, and kind of stitched together with, you know, the supporting documents and things like that. So what ended up happening was the report was put together, and everyone's name basically was attached to it, and it wasn't really that everyone was involved in the whole report. It was that it was basically signed. A lot of people were kind of sandbagged. It's like you contributed one piece to it, and then you're responsible for everyone else's work in that sense. And in that, they basically, in the compartmentalization is where a lot of the lies on the Building 7 collapse were basically allowed to, you know, come to rest, kind of. So this is basically a smoking gun in the sense that, and it seems really, really sneaky the more and more that I learn about this, because I put this article together over the course of about 2 weeks back in November, and, you know, since then, I actually talked to the guy, David Cole, who found the original flaw that I'm going to explain, but, you know, they're still constantly coming up with new information, and, you know, it just requires people to kind of lean on that, or to spread the information in that sense. So, you know, what was discovered, basically, David Cole goes through the construction drawings for Building 7 that were released from this FOIA request, and what he finds is that the pancake theory, the immediate collapse of Building 7 was basically blamed on the structural failure at a key column, which was column 79, between the 12th and 13th floors. And that started basically a chain reaction, which caused the building to supposedly come down in what they admitted to be basically free fall collapse initially. And when you look at what they've done at this length, there's two screenshots. One, which is the actual screenshot of that connection at column 79 in the report. So this is basically where the collapse of Building 7 started at, in their explanation from these fire simulations that they actually put out in the official reports. And what was found was that there's basically a piece of common steel work that was missing from the representation of the column that NIST put together. So NIST basically supposedly went through the drawings and analyzed the building construction and put together a computer simulation of it, but they left out this one little piece that most people wouldn't even notice was there unless they actually went back and looked at the construction drawings, or if they were actually a steel worker of some kind, or an architect maybe, or an engineer. And if you go to this article there, you can just go to, if you're listening on the radio, you can just go to WTFROY.com/911truth. And it's in there. You'll know it right away. It says, did NIST fraudulently omit a key component related to the collapse theory? But this piece that they left out, it basically is a piece that a square plate that's about 3/4 inches thick, I want to say. I need to look at the dimensions here because I don't know it exactly. But the it's 3/4 inch thick, and it's basically a square plate that is welded onto a traditional I-beam. So if you're thinking about a steel beam and you're looking at it from the, like if you're looking down the beam so it looks like an eye, it's basically a square plate that is welded onto the beam itself, typically at the end. In this case, it's welded on at the end where the eye part is the thicker flange of the steel beam, and the web, which is the actual tall vertical section, the block is welded in between there, basically. So it's welded to the bottom and to the vertical section. So the idea would be that as if any part of that beam were to slide, the weight wouldn't basically break the bottom flange of the beam, to be very crude about it. But so what NIST basically came up with is that the floors were supported by these horizontal beams, and this particular connection is where the beam was sitting on a steel plate, which is called the bearing plate, which is basically a seat. So and they secure it with shear studs, and then it's supported by different pieces of steelwork, basically. So the idea that NIST came up with for the collapse theory was that this beam basically slid horizontally one direction because of the mythical fires in the building, that got so hot that it distorted the steel framework. And this beam supposedly slid horizontally, they said, about 5.5 inches initially, horizontally. And because of that, it slid off of the bearing seat, and that initiated the sudden collapse of the building. So what was found, what this David Cole person found, and the other people, he was working with AE-911, and the people over there, they put this all together, and they found that basically in these construction drawings that were basically hidden, in the report, this is where it gets really sneaky. It's very complicated, but the article kind of the article lays it out in a linear fashion so that you can understand, one, what they did, and two, how they cover it up. But where it appears to be, someone basically omitted this particular steel plate from the actual consideration in the report, or more so, if you read the final report on Building 7 now, it doesn't reference anything about that plate and the particular figure. It's in Chapter 8 of the report. They went so far as to even leave that particular component out of the representation of the drawing in the report. So if you look at the report now, you would never know that that component is called for in the construction drawing as it is now.
Yep, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen.